very thankful. That was very kind of you to do that. I wish you wouldn't have, though. But I'm the medical director of lifestyle and wellness at Barton. And I guess since everybody's kind of telling their story, I'll tell a little bit of mine. I was a family physician, broad-based, back in the old days. We delivered babies. We took care of patients in the hospital. We assisted on surgeries. It was a killer job, but it was a great job, but it's really hard. And I did that for 25 years. And then I wanted to, you know, get a life back. And so I went into urgent care, which is, you know, it's just shift work, really. It's somewhat satisfying, but you don't get to know the patients like you do in family practice. So I did that for 13 years. And then I spent some time in New Zealand, 8 months there, because I wanted to see a different medical delivery system. You know, we have our system here. They have a different one there. How does that work? And so when I came back, going around, seeing all my old buddies and everything, and I was shocked when I went in through the waiting rooms at how sick people were. And they weren't that sick back when I was a kid, I mean, when I was young in this profession. The patients are much sicker now. And I thought, well, what's going on? You know, and I think a lot of it is our diet and our lifestyle. And so that's why I really got into this. And these classes and what June has started here were a perfect segue for me to be involved with. And so that's kind of how I got involved with it. But it's certainly something I believe in. I think it's very important. It's easy to do. And for those of you who worry about us doctors not having a job in the future, don't worry about it. It isn't going to cure everything. There's still a lot of things out there that do, that sometimes we just treat the symptoms. We aren't able to affect the causes. But this can do a huge amount for the health of the patient in the world. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. There's a lot to cover, but I want you to at least know the basics of the science behind the questions of why whole food, plant-based, and what's with the no oil part? What about keto, paleo, other diets? What about alcohol? We want to talk about that. And what about our environment? Should that have any way in our discussion? And to set the stage, chronic disease is on the rise. It's not just my perception when I came back. And our environment is deteriorating. And these are escalating problems throughout Western societies. It's not just here in the US. It's in Canada, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. And they affect our economy, they affect our climate, and they probably are affecting our future. Rome is burning. And so, what do we do? We need to act. Who do you believe? And where do you find truth? Well, we need to take care of ourselves first. And that means looking at overall wellness, our choices in nutrition, our choices in exercise, how we handle stress, and our sense of purpose in life. But since this is a culinary workshop, we're just going to cover the nutrition part of it and see what it means to adopt what I believe is the healthiest nutritional pattern for humans, and that's whole food, plant-based, no oil. And all of the diet and nutritional information that's out on the internet today is both good and bad. It's good because it's available for everybody, but it brings confusion and sometimes disagreement on the other. And I think we have to have some skills to be able to try to separate truth from promotion, something that's being done for financial reasons or for some other gain. So here's some tips on that. First, start with common sense. When you look at the information out there on a study, does it make common sense? Does it seem too outlandish or too good to be true? If it is, it probably isn't true. Second, take a look at who funded this study that supports a diet that's being promoted. Was it funded by somebody with a financial stake in the outcome? Look at where the supporting articles were published. Were they in a journal that has an editorial board? An editorial board is experts that are unbiased, that review the proposed articles. They look at the statistics, they look at the methodologies before they allow publication. And then look and see if that's the only study out there. It probably isn't, if it is not corroborated by other studies, you have to be suspect. And then I would say get your information from trusted and trained individuals. Just because someone is persuasive and a salesperson, that doesn't mean that they necessarily know the science. So that said, in the United States today, our number one killer is heart disease, and cancer is number two. And if you add cancer and heart deaths together, you find out that they account for over 65% of all deaths. And that's pretty impressive, but what's just as important is that what we eat influences whether we get heart disease and cancer, and it also affects the remaining 35% of deaths. So let's just look at the top two, heart disease and cancer, and here's what we know. Most heart attacks can be avoided. Observational human studies have shown this, and they've shown us that cities the size of Reno can have from 0 to 1 or 2 heart attacks per year. And all you have to do is open the yellow pages in Reno and look at the number of cardiologists and the number of heart surgeons there, and it tells you we have a ton more than that. And why is that? Well, diet appears to be the most important factor in heart disease, although exercise, stress management, and connectedness or love is also in the equation. But the important point is that most heart attacks can be avoided. We know how to do it, and we know the methods that are in your, the methods to avoid it are in your control. And some cancers can also be avoided, or their incidence at least greatly reduced, and that too is in your control. So what else do we know? Well, of the thousands of studies that have been done on nutrition, only one dietary pattern is proven in multiple studies to reverse this number one killer of heart disease, and that's whole food, plant-based, no oil. And it's effective in the great majority of patients, between as much as 90% of them. And secondly, cancer, on the cancer front, whole food, plant-based can probably reduce cancers by 25 to 30%, mostly through reduction in breast cancer, prostate, and colon cancer, which are three very big incidents of cancer. And when we look at nutritional patterns, specifically at whole food plant-based, we tend to concentrate on the health benefits like heart disease and cancer, but so often that doesn't really motivate people to make change unless they just recently suffered a health scare or a heart attack. We tend to think, well, it's a future possibility. Probably wouldn't happen to me. And to some extent, we tell ourselves, well, if it does happen, c'est la vie. That's life. But I want to change that rather fatalistic view. We can change our destinies. We do have choices. And by adopting healthy habits, we can live lives without the slow deterioration that chronic disease brings on, with years of decline before death. And just so you know, we are still all gonna die, but let's do it. We're not out there that long. We are still gonna die, but let's do it 10 to 15 years later, and let's be healthy and active and engaged for all of our time that we do have here on Earth. Okay, so that's enough for the health part of this. What else do we have to think about with whole food, plant-based, and other nutritional patterns? Well, two other issues are our weight loss and our environment. Whole food, plant-based is very effective optimizing weight. You don't need to count calories. It's filling. It tastes good, and it's effective. And as more and more data and information is collected on global climate change, scientists are seeing links between our diets and our farming techniques and the worsening picture of our climate. So about other dietary patterns? Well, virtually all of the diets that are out there, at least in part, are related to weight control. So let's see how they compare, but not only in weight loss, but let's also look at health and at the environment. So first off, we need to understand that every diet out there that causes weight loss can show short-term health benefits, and at least for those that are overweight. And these benefits really accrue simply by reducing weight, because when you reduce weight, when you go from obesity to normalized weight, your cholesterol generally improves, your blood pressure improves, and you feel more energetic. But beyond those immediate health improvements gained only through the weight loss, the health benefits really do not persist. And so before we start talking about these diets, I want to comment on what's called the SAD diet, which I think is kind of an interesting term. It stands for Standard American Diet. And we feel like it causes so much of our problems, and it's the diet we really need to move away from. So we need to know, well, what exactly is it? Well, it's a diet that's high in processed foods. And so you think packaged foods, you think fast foods, you think convenience foods, and also it's high in saturated fats, high in refined sugar. So that's the standard American diet. And so let's compare and contrast diets, and let's start with whole food plant-based, but looking beyond heart disease and cancer reduction towards sustainable benefits in our biometrics and in our lab results. And first off, there's the reduction in inflammation. Inflammation is at the root of most of our chronic diseases, and it's also at the root of much of the aging process itself. And there's the drop in cholesterol, often to levels where heart disease is not seen, below 150. And number three is improvement in our gut biome. Whole food plant-based promotes a transition to a population of bacteria in the gut that don't promote heart disease or colon cancer. And there's also a dramatic drop in diabetes. And then an area which people are often confused about is that of getting enough protein. And studies have repeatedly shown, and professional dietary organizations have written, that whole food plant-based provides a proper amount and breadth and type of protein intake. And I think we've heard sports and exercise enthusiasts comment that they don't think whole food plant-based provides enough protein. But it's a fact. It's estimated that in the United States, we consume too much protein, not too little protein. And overdoing protein can cause harm to the kidneys. It promotes osteoporosis, and it's simply not necessary. Athletes like Carl Lewis, if you remember Carl Lewis, and Serena Williams, and most recently Tom Brady, there are certainly examples that plant-based nutrition can provide adequate protein for high-level performance. And then number six is blood pressure, which is reduced with whole food plant-based. And lastly is the topic of your genes. Now, you were born with about a little over 20,000 genes. But not all of these genes are active all the time. Some are turned off at times, some are turned on at other times. And our dietary patterns have been found to be one of the biggest influencers on whether genes are turned on or turned off. And we can talk more about it later, but suffice it to say that whole food plant-based turns on genes that are beneficial, while meats, refined sugars, and processed foods generally turn on harmful genes. And it's not that some of us have harmful genes and others don't, the lucky ones don't. We all have harmful genes within us. It's just a matter of which ones are turned on and which are not. And so the idea is, since we all have harmful genes, is to be on a diet that promotes the good ones over the bad. And the last issue on whole food plant-based is this no oil part of it. And why is oil discouraged? Well, the no oil is a large part of getting to 10% fat, which is the diet that is shown to reverse heart disease. It's also known to inhibit the dilation of our arteries, the widening of our arteries, and also all oils promote atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries by damaging the endothelium, the lining of the arteries. And people say, well, what about extra virgin olive oil? I've heard that's good. Well, it is better than a totally animal fat that's converted to an oil, but it does not promote heart health. It's not a whole food, and so if you do use it sparingly.
What about avocado oil?
Similar. It's similar. Then I'd ask June that. I think it's maybe slightly better than.
Or versus. I stopped cooking with extra olive and I switched to avocado oil.
They all damage the endothelium. They're all problematic, so the least you can manage down to none. If you're trying to reverse heart disease, you have to get rid of it all. You have to get rid of all oils. And that's one of the things Jane's going to be showing you, how you can actually cook without oil today.
I'm very interested.
Okay. Let's go through some popular diets. And let's start off with keto. Even though
why is this so popular?
Let me just go on. The keto diet is the European Society of Cardiology, the American Heart Association, have both classed it as harmful, and they discourage it. Okay, and it's very low in carbohydrates, and it's very high in fat. And you lose weight on the keto diet by restricting calories and carbohydrates. And you're supposed to pee on a urine dipstick every day to make sure that you're spilling ketones. And ketones in your urine are a marker that you're burning fat. But the fats that you eat on the other side promote prediabetes, diabetes, and some cancers. So it's really not a healthy diet. And then there's paleo. And paleo is interesting. There's kind of a romanticism about paleo, you know, getting back to basics. And there's even some biologic plausibility surrounding the premise of paleo. And presumably, a paleo diet is based on what we ate from an evolutionary standpoint. And I think most scientists would agree that diets that we evolved with are likely to be the healthiest. But there are major holes in paleo diets. And first off, paleo is not a high fiber diet. And that's largely because there is no fiber in animal foods. And meat is a large part of paleo. And anthropological studies show that Paleolithic man ate diets that were extremely high in fiber. And they had to get it from plants. And although grains are excluded from paleo, anthropologists tell us that we've been eating grains for at least 100,000 years. And then the animals which Paleolithic man ate, which are now all extinct, were very different from the animals we eat today. The animals that the Paleolithic people ate had fat at about 7% of their weight, and most of that was polyunsaturated, whereas the beef, the industrial beef today is about 40% fat versus 7%, and it's mostly saturated, which promotes heart disease. So paleo enthusiasts say, well, let's just substitute grass-fed beef, and then it'll be healthier. Don't eat the industrial beef. And to a small extent, That's true. However, it is not sustainable. If we all ate grass-fed beef, it's estimated we would need 2.5 Earths to feed us all. So it's not a sustainable thing. And it's even less sustainable if we say, well, we're just going to eat wild game. So I'd say paleo is some better than standard American, but it's not that healthy, and it's certainly not environmentally sustainable. And then there's the low-carb, high-protein Atkins and South Beach diets. And these diets can help weight loss, but they appear to be associated with an increased risk in our number one killer, which is heart disease. And in fact, Dr. Atkins himself had heart disease, but he said his heart disease was from a viral infection. So, and I should mention that South Beach actually isn't as low in carbs as the Atkins, and the fats that are used in South Beach are considered healthier than those in Atkins, but they're still not healthy, and they still probably promote heart disease. And then there's the American Heart Association's DASH diet, which was developed to help stop hypertension, and it's pretty good at that, actually. And it's high in whole vegetables and fruit, but whole food plant-based actually beats it out on hypertension. And because DASH includes meat, I suspect that future long-term studies of DASH will likely show what other long-term studies have shown when they include meat and dairy and eggs, which is an elevation in the risk for colon cancer and heart disease. And then there's the new Weight Watchers diet. And they reformulated and given it a new look on their websites and such. And it's very similar, actually, to a Mediterranean diet. But Weight Watchers continues to have a business model where you they're selling you a subscription, which ranges from about $12 a month to up to $50 a month if you sign up for telephone health coaching. And that's before you buy any of their meal plans or their products. So it's not that Weight Watchers is terrible, but it's expensive and it's less effective in avoiding chronic disease than whole food plant-based. And so, speaking of Mediterranean, let's talk about Mediterranean. One of the issues I have with this diet is that there are over 15 different versions of Mediterranean. And so it makes it studying it complex and confusing, but there are plenty of studies out there that show that Mediterranean is better than standard American. And that's because Mediterranean emphasizes whole foods, fruits, vegetables, legumes, and avoiding refined sugar. And the various versions of Mediterranean differ mostly in the amount of olive oil that they recommend, or the frequency of meat, or the eggs, or the dairy that they promote. And there are experts out there who believe that Mediterranean is the most adoptable diet for a diverse population because it's less of a change for people. But with all the different published versions of this diet, people can, and they do, migrate. They stray from the most beneficial elements, and they migrate to the more the meat, eggs, and dairy, the worst parts of it. And they justify it in their minds by saying, well, they're just transitioning to a different version. They're still on the Mediterranean diet. So that's the issue with it. With me, it's not my favorite diet. And then there's Whole 30, which has some merit from the standpoint of promoting whole vegetables and some fruit, but it's a 30-day diet plan, not one which continues, and it actually promotes foods that are high in saturated fat, like ghee, and it excludes others that are proven to be beneficial, like grains and legumes. Whole 30 is really not a long-term diet plan, and some of these other fat inclusions make it suspect for its healthfulness, which will likely be borne out if longer scientific studies are ever done. So that was the top 10 diets, and I want to move on to the topic of alcohol, because it causes so much controversy and contention and fights and stuff like that. But here's my take on it. It's recently been declared by the World Health Organization, which came out saying no amount of alcohol is safe. And this is in the face of quite a number of other studies that show in mild or small or moderate amounts, it can be healthy, and it's specifically included in a Mediterranean diet. So who's right? Well, I don't actually know for sure, but when the evidence conflicts, and yet we got a lot of studies out there looking at large groups, they're well-done studies, it means that the overall effect is pretty small. So we're arguing about something that isn't that big. And there is a clear association of increased risk of high amounts of alcohol for cancer and for liver disease and dementia. But there are elements of wellness that are beyond diet. And the two of them are stress and connectedness. And these factors need to be considered, because when alcohol is consumed, it's usually as a part of a social gathering, in a time when friends get together, they enjoy their each other's company. That reduces stress. It can relate to a sense of purpose in life. And the alcohol consumed in these social situations tends to be small, or at least moderate. So if alcohol is used in small or moderate amounts in social situations, not when you're alone, the negative influence may very well be outweighed by the positive influence of the social interaction. So bottom line, small to moderate amounts on a non-daily basis is probably not going to significantly affect your longevity.
What is small and moderate?
One drink for females, two for males. And I don't know why they say two for males. It must have been males that did the study. I honestly am not sure what happened, but that's what the party line is. So I want to move back to whole food, plant-based, no oil, in the context of our deteriorating environment. And most of the meat that we eat today is industrially produced. And that means scenes like on this slide of beef, hogs, and chicken in feedlots. And first of all, the animal waste produced from these feedlots isn't processed like human waste is. The runoff from these animal wastes, along with the fertilizers and the pesticides that are used to feed these animals, contributes 80% of the nitrogen and phosphate pollution in our streams, rivers, and coastal areas. That nitrogen and phosphorus is responsible for dead zones in our oceans, which are enlarging, and also for red tides, which frequently foul the beaches of the Florida Gulf. And secondly, is the issue of water consumption. It takes an estimated 1,800 gallons of fresh water to produce a pound of beef, whereas a pound of grain takes about 100 gallons, or even less. And third is the carbon footprint of our industrialized meat production. This carbon footprint is roughly equal to that of the entire transportation sector: cars, trucks, trains, and planes. We can easily and we can quickly reduce our carbon footprint by eliminating meat and dairy. We don't have to wait for a government to take meaningful action on climate change. A significant part of it is on us, and it's within our control. And then lastly is the ethical issue of how we treat these creatures in these crowded conditions. So let's move to seafood from the oceans. One of the methods that we have of harvesting this seafood is by trawling, where we essentially scrape the bottom of the sea to get the species of fish that we want. And the problem with this is that 70% of what we bring up is not the target species. It's called bycatch. And it's discarded back into the ocean, often dead or damaged. And we trawl on a huge scale. Each year we trawl an area that's 150 times larger than the global forests that we clear. And it's under the surface of water, so generally the public doesn't know about it. And this is a satellite view of a fleet of bottom trawlers scraping the bottom of the mouth of the Yangtze River in China. And I don't know about you, but look at the size of this operation, the plumes of sediment that follow seems pretty disturbing.
What are the black dots?
What's that? The black dots are the ships.
That's how many.
That's how many are in this fleet dragging them out of the Yangtze. Another damaging method for seafood is long line fishing, where they have fishing lines as long as 100 miles that they tow, and they have thousands of hooks on them that are baited, and so seabirds get caught as well as fish. And largely because of this today, every albatross species is now endangered. And there's a huge decline in the number of predator fish that are being caught now versus 50 years ago. The long life of these predator species means that renewal will not be fast. It'll be very slow. And then there's the ethical issue of we're depleting the oceans of fish by these industrial scale methods. Small, poor countries where subsistence fishermen live, they're just trying to feed their families, and they're finding it harder and harder to get a decent catch. And so they have to go farther and farther out into sea in rickety boats, and sometimes they don't return. And it just doesn't seem right that we, as the West, are doing this. And so aquaculture is promoted as being the antidote to this, but it's really much the same as industrial beef production. Small fish are netted to be turned into fish meal to be fed to the aquaculture species. And then antibiotics have to be added because of the overcrowded conditions. And then the oceans are polluted by the concentrated excrement from these fish farms. So to sum up, you can see there is multiple reasons why whole food plant-based no oil is likely the most effective approach to health, to weight, and to our environment. And let there be no doubt, I personally believe that that is the best approach. But that said, I'm also tolerant of lesser dietary approaches if they're moving people away from our standard American diet. Sometimes lesser approaches or incomplete adoption of whole food plant based no oil serve as a stepping stone for people, and complete change will come as circumstances change. And we all have to do what we can do, do the best we can, but I think the truth of science needs to be our guide, not profit or fads. And let us not forget that Rome is burning. So, and also what's been shown in the United States is that 90% of people don't like the cook. And so that's why we're offering this workshop, not only to introduce techniques which make cooking fun, but also to demonstrate and teach that cooking plant-based is something that we can all learn. So I'm going to end here, turn it over to your expert teaching team, and thank you for your attention. And I think we have a couple minutes. Do we have a couple minutes? No.
Two questions.
Okay, two questions. Sorry. I went over.
Do we have any questions or anything about the burger?
Yeah.
How do you feel about the meal kits that are coming out?
They're another convenience. I think that there are some where you can have whole food plant-based options. They're expensive, but you know, if you really don't have any time, I think they can be helpful. There's some that, you know, come fully packaged, you just put them in the oven. There's others that come with the ingredients, and you're supposed to be able to make it within a half hour. There's a number of them, and the they're referenced in the.